Okay. So the homework one is due, and I'm going to start adding questions for homework two that basically have correlation clustering, vector space, correlation clustering, and latent semantic indexing, which we are discussing since last time. Are there any questions before I complete or continue and complete the discussion of LSI? None? No question? Okay. So we were looking at fish last time, and we basically were looking to see if there is a way of summarizing the variation, if there is a way of reducing the number of dimensions, or if there is at least a, so the original idea is to reduce the number of dimensions, and a possible way of going about it is if somebody gives you a ranking of the dimensions from those dimensions which have the most variation for the data to the dimensions that have the least variation for the data. Okay, if I give you that, then that looks like a reasonable way of cutting down dimension. Okay, so if you have no other idea, if you do not know how people are going to use this data, right, the best you can do is this. Later on, we will actually see an idea which is closely connected to latent semantic indexing, or PCA, called LDA. And LDA essentially tries to reduce dimensions given that you are interested in separating two classes. So doing dimensionality reduction with respect to a classification problem is LDA. Okay, and we'll see that in that particular case, sometimes we might have extra information as to what dimensions are worth differentiating on. Okay, so keep that in the back of your mind. But now we don't really know what people are going to do with these fish. Okay, all I want to do is sort of compress the data, in some sense compress the number of dimensions, reduce them. And currently the dimensions that are there are not obviously ordered in any order, in the sense it's not the case that this dimension has the most variation, this has the least variation. It looks like both are sort of similar. Okay. Had it been the case that all the fish were like focused here, then you knew. You lucked out. In that case, x-axis is the most important dimension, y is the next most important dimension. But normally, you don't get that lucky. So you have this sort of a scenario. So what we did was we noticed that you can have, if you consider the principal directions of this data, you know, so if you actually, if you make your axis such that this is one axis and this is another axis, then on this axis, essentially, you have the maximum amount of variation. On this axis, this is the second most amount of variation. And I mentioned that this is connected to the notion of eigen decomposition. And in particular, it turns out that if you took a correlation matrix, we'll talk about in a minute, and then you took the eigen decomposition of it, or think of an ellipsoid that's surrounding these points, and consider the major and minor axis of those ellipsoids, that will give you the axis as well as the level of variation across those axes. Okay, so in this particular case, it's 1.75 winds up being one of the eigenvalues, and 0.25 winds up being the other of the eigenvalues. And the eigenvector directions are, that's one direction and that's the other direction. And notice that those directions are actually perpendicular to each other, so they do make orthonormal bases. Okay, and so in once you do this, in essence, you would wind up getting dimensions ordered from in the rank of most varying, the ones across which the data has the most variance, to the ones across which data has the least variance. Okay, first understand that dimensions along which data has no variance are completely useless. You have to understand that, right? I mean, if everybody is, you know, it's like suppose you're trying to summarize aspects of a population of entities, and if all of them have, you know, the one of the attributes is dead or alive, and all of them have answer alive, It's basically a useless attribute. It doesn't distinguish the data at all. You don't know why you're going to distinguish the data point from one to other, but it's clear that irrespective of what you do, if there is no variance at all on that particular direction, it's useless. Yes, sir.
Can we relate this to how when we are doing keyword analysis, if a particular keyword is present in all documents,
it's not off like that. Exactly. It's related, but not, you know, it's not direct. I mean, it's sort of analogous, but, you know, it's not directly connected. Yes.
I just have a doubt. Do you remove dimension if there's absolutely no correlation or if there is very little correlation?
What I want to do is cut down the dimensions. So basically, somebody comes and tells me that, look, you only have 7 dimensions to deal with. So pick whichever 7 dimensions you want. Then so you lose some variance. But the issue is, can I pick the 7 dimensions along which the maximum variance is there, such that everything I left out winds up basically being less important? Okay, so it's not the case. It is not the case that you are actually only ignoring dimensions along which variance is zero. It is that because of resource restrictions, if I say you can only use k dimensions. So for in this particular case, if I tell you can only use one dimension, it's clear that you will use this. Whereas in this axis, if I said you can only use one dimension, that's like use either left eye or right eye. You know, both are important. Okay. Yes.
Because I thought, I mean, if you're removing dimensions where there is at least some correlation, will that amount to losing information?
Yes.
Losing data?
Yes, of course.
So that means will the query not become a bit approximate? It just means that we approximate.
Yeah, but I mean, what are we? Who are we trying to impress? We started with a document and right away ignored the fact that it's actually made up of English and made it into a bag of words. So what exactly are you going to lose? You know, we are at the bottom of the heap, you know, so anything we do, basically, it's not, yes, you will lose information, it's just the question is how little can you get by. And more interestingly, think about the following thing. What if, in fact, how do you know? Maybe I showed you the fish, but suppose it turned out that the data is actually unidimensional and somebody added some extra noise to the data such that it looks like it's two-dimensional. So what you're losing could be the noise, which is a good thing. Okay? So that's the idea. So in this particular case, and there's actually a nice way of explaining how much of the data variance would you have lost if you only took the top k dimension after doing this eigendecomposition. Okay, it turns out that that's equal to, if your eigenvalues are lambda 1 to lambda n, right, and if you take the k dimensions only, first k dimensions, then you consider lambda 1 plus lambda 2, etc., up to lambda k divided by the sum of all lambdas. That will give you the fraction of variance that you have kept, which means 1 minus that is the fraction of variance you lost. Okay, so there is a nice way of connecting the loss of information in terms of the data variance. Okay, so this is what we did last time. So, and then ended by saying, if we can do it for fish, why can't we do it for documents? And if we have documents as vectors in the space of terms, we want to transform the axis. Here's what we want to do. We want to transform the axis so that the new axes are orthogonal. That means they're actually independent of each other. Notice that in the case of fish, see, here's an interesting thing. If you consider the original axis, it's not that the original axes are actually not orthogonal. They were orthogonal, except the data makes them correlated. It turns out that if you have only this as your data, in some sense, knowing X tells you something about Y. Do you understand what I'm saying? Whereas having changed the axis, now, if I tell you this axis, you don't know anything about this axis. Remember, the whole point of independence of the dimensions is, if I tell you 9,999 of the dimensions of a 10,000-dimensional vector, you still don't know a thing about the 10,000th dimension. That's when you say they're independent. Okay? So having translated the vectors, now they actually are linearly independent. So you won't know anything about this axis if I tell you this axis. Okay? So that's what we're trying to do. They should be orthonormal and can be ordered in terms of the amount of variation in the documents they capture. which is what we've been talking about, such that if you dare to take the first k dimensions, you can still take the first k dimensions. Okay? And then once you do that, you can pick the top k dimensions in this ordering and use those dimensions as the new keywords. Now it turns out that these new keywords may not have any physical significance in the domain, because these would be linear combination of the words that you started with. Okay, these are not words at all anymore. Now, and as I mentioned last time when we were talking about the original motivation, right? If in fact the real terms have been removed and only the linearly dependent terms are left, then when you reduce the dimensionality and then you get these new terms, right, those would not be any of the dimensions you started with. They would now be linear combinations of the dimensions you started with. So what that means is your current terms themselves will be vectors, non-trivial vectors in the new space, as you expect, because they are linear combinations. Okay. Okay, so I want to do that and use the first, those top k dimensions to do vector space similarity ranking. Now, so then I would basically reduce, now why would I want to do that? The idea is that, as we argued in the beginning, in last class, when we talked about how the data could have been generated to begin with, this can reduce noise, this can eliminate dependent variables if the dependencies are linear, right? And this can also capture synonymy and polysemy. That means if this word and this word are appearing together and this word and this word are correlated, then this and this will get correlated. You can take care of that. Okay? And each of these can be done by other approaches. In fact, correlation analysis that we discussed earlier does this to some extent. But this is like comes in one package, and it also has this nice connection with dimensional reduction. So how would you do it? Essentially, eigen decomposition, and in particular, a variation of it called singular value decomposition. And so we'll talk a little about matrix theory now. I'm not going to do linear algebra class, but I'll do enough that you go back and read relevant material so that you'll understand why we're doing this. Remember that the most important thing in which is connected to the number of dependent versus independent dimensions in a matrix is the rank of a matrix. So if I take a matrix which has, if I take a matrix which has a non-zero determinant, you know, I take a squared matrix, let's say, then I add here A plus B, A minus B, C plus D, C minus D, and I also add here linear combinations of these terms and linear combination of these terms. Now I suddenly made a 2 by 2 matrix into a 4 by 4 matrix, right? And so suddenly the matrix looks bigger, and it looks, seems like it has four dimensions instead of the two dimensions that you started with. But rank is your friend. Rank tells you that the rank of this matrix is really only 2. Because rank of a matrix, it can be any square, any matrix, rank of any matrix is the largest, the size of the largest square submatrix of that matrix, which has non-zero determinant. That's what it is. Okay? So in terms of talking about reducing dimensionality, we can make this whole discussion from a matrix theory point of view in terms of rank of matrices. Okay? So a rank, so that's basically what we're saying. Rank of a matrix is defined as the size of the largest square submatrix which has non-zero determinant. Okay? Now it's also, of course, connected. There are a bunch of other facts about the rank, one of which is that rank of a matrix is also connected to the number of non-zero singular values it has, number of non-zero eigenvalues. Eigen and singular values are connected. We'll talk about in a minute. Okay, and it's also connected, obviously, to the notion of dimensionality of the matrix, because we started with a two-dimensional matrix, made into a four-dimensional matrix, and yet its true rank, true dimensionality is is given by the actual rank, right? And that's actually only 2. Okay, so now one might ask the following thing. If you were interested in what this guy wanted to do, which is not lose any dimensions that have any variance at all, right? Then all you need to do is find the rank, true rank of the DT matrix. You know, you remember the document term matrix. It's a big matrix. Find the true rank of it. Okay? And whatever that rank is, that's the hidden dimensionality of that data. Okay? That's understood. However, I want to do more than that, because it may be that actually I did not do exactly this. I did where epsilon is a noise parameter. So I took linear combinations of features and then I added some noise. So that will throw you off the scent. You no longer will have this matrix have rank 2. It could be that it has rank 4. So you think, wow, you know, it's really a two dimensionality is 4. But I want to know what was the original dimensionality before all this extra noise has been added. And you can think of rank as very low, noise as a very low artificial correlation that you added. So the question that I want to ask is the following. Given a matrix M, okay, and if you have decided that what you want to do, so this matrix M and a parameter K, which is the number of dimensions that I'm allowing you, that's it. K is the only number of dimensions I'll allow you. Okay? Now you know that the number of independent dimensions is equal to the rank of the matrix. So what I want to know is, given a dimension, given a matrix M, find me a matrix M dash that's derived from M somehow, okay, such that this matrix M dash has rank K. Okay? So first thing is for this to be, for M dash to be rank, I mean only K dimensions, it better have rank K. So I'm looking for a rank K matrix, M dash. Now, there are many, many, millions and gazillions of infinite number of rank K matrices. Right? Okay. Now, furthermore, suppose this M is D by T. You know, this M is D documents and T terms matrix. Now, obviously, I would like to get this as still D by T matrix. So my M dash is still going to be a D by T matrix. So that's nice, but still there are infinite number of D by T matrices which have rank K. What I want to know is, give me that M dash of all the M dashes which have rank K and which have dimensions D by T, that is somehow closest to the original matrix. Optimization problem. So that's what I want to optimize. Okay? So what we want to do is, and then so to talk about it, you need to talk about distances between matrices. If I give you two matrices, how close are they? And there are many norms, many distance matrices for matrices. One of the usual ones is the sum of the squares of the differences between the corresponding entries in both these matrices. So suppose I have, let's say, A, B, C, D here, and you have A dash, B dash, C dash, D dash, then I'm just taking A minus A dash square, sum over all the entries. That'll be equal to zero when both of them are equal, and it will be larger if they're far enough from each other. Okay? So I want the matrices to be as close as possible in their terms of distance, while at the same time the new matrix has to have the rank K. That's what I want to do. Okay? Yes? Which one? Where am I?
The right column.
Right column, okay. Find a matrix M dash. No, so this is a more general question, which is, let's see, what are we going to do? Given M of rank R. So I'm trying to find, so in this particular case, I decided R dash is equal to K. So find a new matrix which is rank K, or rank R dash, such that the distance between that matrix and the original matrix is the least. So what's your question?
If the rank of the M dash is less than R.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, of all the m dashes, no, obviously m dash better not have the same rank as m. It makes no sense. If it has the same rank as m, then you have not reduced the dimensionality of the data. Do you understand? I mean, so it's a nice idea. Basically, what we are saying is, this guy has the same size as this guy, but its hidden rank, its true rank is only k. But there are so many such matrices which have that size but rank k. I want the one which has the lowest difference, distance between m and this. So this actually is a calculus of variations problem. You know, you're trying to minimize a distance given a constraint on the rank. Okay? And it turns out, I won't show you why the answer winds up being equal to, winds up being related to eigenvalues, but I just say that the answer is related to eigenvalues, okay? And in particular, it's related to singular value decomposition, okay? If you are interested in the mathematical basics, you should actually go back and look at, you know, how from this problem you can actually get the solution that SVD is the solution for this minimization problem. Okay. Now, having said that, so I just basically said the answer to this is SVD. In fact, the answer to this is SVD in a very general sense. If you take the original matrix M and do the singular value decomposition of that matrix, then the singular value decomposition will give you a new, it will give you a new coordinate basis such that the coordinate axes are ordered in terms of maximum to least variance, most to least variance, exactly what you wanted. So now for any k, you can pick exactly the first k dimension in that decomposition. Okay? So that's the advantage of understanding SVD, because once you do SVD, you get this. Now let's say a couple of things about SVD, because assuming that you know enough about eigenvalue decomposition, let me say a few things about SVD. Okay. Again, what I'm trying to do is not give you the entire theory of eigenvalue decomposition and singular value decomposition. You know, you should go back and read numerical algebra and linear algebra stuff a little bit more. What I'm doing is giving you enough, you know, hooks that you can actually go back and read. Okay. So you know eigen decomposition. Now one interesting thing is, as you probably know, first of all, eigen decomposition is only defined for square matrices. Point one. Okay? And point two, eigenvalues don't even have to be real. And I made it sound as if the axis, the length of the importance of the axis is equal to the eigenvalue corresponding to that direction. That makes sense only if eigenvalues are actually real. Okay, but you know that for square matrices, even for square matrices, eigenvalues can be imaginary. Okay, keep that in mind. So eigenvalue decomposition is defined only for square matrices. And in fact, only a subset of the square matrices called square symmetric matrices. Okay, so these are the matrices which are not only square, but they are symmetric. That means, you know, across the diagonal, the element here is the same as element here. Aij is equal to Aji. So only for symmetric square matrices, eigenvalues are guaranteed to be real. Okay. Now, an idea called principal component analysis, which essentially is very closely related to the singular value decomposition, exactly uses this idea, basically, that it says that take the correlation matrix for any data. Now, correlation matrix for any data is going to be a square matrix. Not only that, correlations are by definition symmetric. If Aij is 5, then Aji is 5. So correlation matrices for any data of any size is going to be a square matrix. Okay? Principal components analysis normally is applied to the correlation matrices of any data. Okay? Now SVD is very closely related to PCA, and all it does, and in fact, all it does is, it gives you, you'll see that it gives you a way of thinking in terms of directions for both documents and terms in our scenario, you know, because we have DT matrix. So what the SVD is doing is the following. Given any matrix DT, right, This is what it does. You have two correlation matrices given dt. One is dt times dt dash, which is what? What is dt times dt dash? dd, right? And the other is dt dash times dt, which is tt. Okay, so you have two correlation matrices. Given a dd, I'm sorry, given the original matrix dt, you have dd and you have tt. I want you to think in these terms. These are good mnemonics. I actually tried to change all the m's out. So this slide actually is in terms of dd's and dt's. Okay, so dd and tt are correlation matrices, and they are going to be square and symmetric. So the idea that you would do if you are just looking for the analysis, the eigen decomposition analysis, is to basically consider the eigenvalues of dd, eigenvalue decomposition of dd and eigenvalue decomposition of tt. Because that's possible. Okay? Now the only thing I want is clearly dd and tt are related. They come from the same matrix. It's like column space, row space. They are correlation over columns versus rows. So what I really want, so if I have dd, then if I give you the eigen decomposition of that, you have this idea, right? So if I have a square matrix M and I give you the eigen decomposition, which would be the vectors, eigenvectors times the singular value decomposition times the eigenvector transpose. This is exact decomposition. So if you multiply V times the diagonal matrix of the eigenvalues times V dash, you'll get M back. That holds for when you do eigenvector decomposition for dd separately, tt separately. What I want is a nice equation which is holding for dt directly. Okay? So what I do is the following. For dd, let's say there is, let's call the vector of, so when I do the eigen decomposition on dd, I get a df, which is the eigen vector for dd, and a set of set of eigenvalues, which is lambda I, okay, and then of course df dash. Okay, what I'll do is I'll take this guy, put it here first. I put this but I take square roots, you'll see in a minute why. And then the only thing, of course, is tt also has a similar eigen decomposition. It has tf times a bunch of eigenvalues times tf dash. Okay? All I'll do is I'll take this tf dash here. Now, the first question is, where is the guarantee that these lambdas and these lambdas are related? It turns out that those lambdas are exactly the same. And so the middle matrix for this guy as well as this guy are the same. And in some sense, they are the eigenvalues, they are the eigenvalues of the correlation matrix, which is sort of a squared matrix. So you take the square root to get the singular value decomposition. Okay? And then that's tf dash. So that's it. So the SVD of a matrix, any matrix dt, is the first eigenvectors of dd, where dd is the correlation matrix, dt times dt dash, positive square roots of the eigenvalues of either dd or tt, because they both have the same exact eigenvalues, and then the eigenvectors of tt. You multiply those three, you will get back the original matrix. So it's again eigenvectors and eigenvalues, you think of them in the context of eigen decomposition, which is a way of decomposing a matrix into simpler matrices which have interesting properties. Singular value, and it holds, eigen decomposition holds only for square matrices. Singular value decomposition, on the other hand, holds for any matrix. Eigen decomposition normally does not give you real valued eigenvalues. Singular value decomposition gives you completely real valued eigenvalues, because by definition these are the square roots of the eigenvalues of the correlation matrices, which are symmetric and square. Okay, so that's what SVD does. Unless, so now the interesting thing is, if a given a random matrix M, even if it is square, it can have a different eigen decomposition and different SVD decomposition. They will wind up being equal only if it is both square and symmetric. So SVD is related in the context of square matrices if the square matrices are real value. And you can see that that makes sense based on the way we are doing the based on the way we are doing the SVD definition. Okay. So again, the more important, more useful thing, of course, is SVD is defined in terms of the eigenvalues and vectors of the correlation matrix. So they'll always be real valued. And furthermore, if you have a bunch of real valued numbers, there is always a total order on them. You can say what's the largest number, what's the second largest number, what's the third largest number, etc. So by definition, what you do is, when you're writing this decomposition, you would put the diagonal matrix here, order it from the largest to the smallest on the diagonal. Okay? Let me give you an example now, just so that you have an idea of how it looks like for something that we do. Okay, for this matrix, our friend, DT matrix, okay, this would be your DF, and again, notice another mnemonic I'm forcing on you. Think of this as DF, because the idea is there is a single coordinate space that connects the terms and the documents. Remember I said, once you have removed the original keywords and only linear dependent keywords are left, then in fact the keywords that you're starting with now are actually vectors in some other space. So the keywords are vectors in the factor space. Documents are also vectors in the factor space. Think in that way. Okay? So this winds up being the DF, which is the eigenvectors of the DD matrix. This winds up being TF, which is the eigenvectors of the TT matrix. This just winds up being the eigenvalue matrix of either DD or TT. And furthermore, notice what happened. You have nicely, this is 77, this is 69, this is 22, 13, 12, 4, etc. You know, there is, because they're all real numbers, there's a total order. It could be that they're all equal, it could be that one is larger than the other is larger than, etc. Or it could also be that some of them are close to each other. But now I do have a way of figuring out what is the order in which the dimensions are. Okay, and if I now, in this new space, if I want to reduce dimensionality of this data, but before I do that, let's look at one more, okay, no, let me do that. If I want to reduce the dimensionality of this data, what do? I need to say, look, suppose I only want, what do I want, I mean, I remember what I wanted. Okay, now here is one more thing. As I said, you can actually think of this as a coordinate axis for the document space, and these give you how important are each coordinate axis. So the true document vector in the factor space would be DF times FF. And similarly, the true coordinate vector for the terms in the factor space would be TF times FF. Okay? Now, here is my interesting thing. Suppose I only want to take the only two dimensions I want. My data should only have two dimensions. All I need to do is, anybody can notice that this is a decomposition, so if you multiply this by this by this, I'll get my original matrix back. First of all, this decomposition already tells you something interesting. What's the original data? What is the true rank of the original data? What is the true dimensionality of my original data? How many non-zero singular values am I showing? Six. It's really six. Now, that unfortunately is not particularly impressive fact, because there are 10 documents and there are 6 terms, and everybody knows that if you have an M by N matrix, the rank cannot be greater than the smallest of M and N. But if in fact there were true linear dependencies, you may even have gotten 4 as the dimensionality, because you know after you know there are only 4 non-zero singular values, then you would have known right away that the you know the other the true dimensionality was only 4. That's nice to know. Okay, the rest are just true you know non-noisy linear combinations. Now I have 6 dimensions, but I'm only interested in keeping 2 maximum. Now the nice thing is I know which 2 to keep. I exactly know which 2 to keep, because I'm guaranteed that if I keep this and this, I'll get the maximum. Now here is an interesting question, just to mess with your mind, okay? When we were talking about picking the most similar document and then picking the next most similar document, I said that if you just rank all the documents in terms of their the similarity to the query, and you pick the most similar, that's correct. But the second most similar may not necessarily be the one that is similar to the query, because after seeing the first query, first document, the user may not be as interested in the second document, may be interested in the fourth document. Because of which, you need to actually, I said, you need to maximize 2 things at the same time. One is similarity to the query and distance between the documents. So in general, picking a subset out of a set should involve combinatorics. You can't just pick, you know, if you pick top 1 document, it's clear. Picking top 2 documents, it's not clear, because you need to see which document, I mean, how much is the correlation between this document and the next document. Why don't I have to worry about it here? What? Exactly. That's a good part. So in fact, this is a classic case where, in this case, that these dimensions are all completely orthogonal. And the variance of the data among this and along this dimension has nothing to do with this dimension. So because of which, in this particular case, in fact, the optimization becomes easy. You want K, pick the top K. Okay? So now, how do I pick the top K? All I need to do is zero out everything other than the top K eigenvalue. Okay? So I just kept these 2 and I made all of the other guys 0. That's all. Now if I multiply this by this by this, do I still get a matrix which is 10 by 6 or not? Yes or no?
Yes.
Will it have rank 2 or not? Beautiful. The only thing was, so at least 2 of the syntactic requirements are taken care of. It would be a 10 by 6 matrix. It will have rank 2. The only question is, how do you know that this is the one with the lowest variation? That was what basically the calculus of variations proof tells you. That in fact, SVD will wind up having the lowest variation. That, you know, if you pick them in that direction, that's the lowest. Okay? So, reducing the dimensionality would then mean, what happens? In essence, the document space, DF times FF now, the documents will only have 2 dimensions. Terms also will only have 2 dimensions. So even though the documents and terms originally are in larger space, documents were in a 6-dimensional space, terms were in a 10-dimensional space. But now both are in 2-dimensional space. Now for even more interesting fact, which is, more importantly, when you did this, you can exactly characterize what is the amount of variance that you lost. It's again, the amount of variance that you kept is, you know, the sum of the eigenvalues that you kept divided by the total sum of all the eigenvalues. Except the eigenvalues that you have here, the singular values you have are the square roots of eigenvalues. So you square them back. Okay, so you basically lambda I square for the k dimensions divided by the total number of lambda squared. And 1 minus that is the loss. And for this particular case, if I take first 2 dimensions then I only lost 7.5% of the variance of the data. Looks good. Okay? Now, furthermore, what's more interesting is in doing this, you essentially change your coordinate space, and when you change your coordinate space, you start realizing that the original space was actually correlated. So the new coordinate space, you start seeing connections that you would not have seen before. Okay, so in the fish case, the new coordinate space is sort of close to size plus the other would be whatever is not captured by the size. Okay. Let's look at what happens to our data in this case. This is a beautiful picture. I mean, you should stare at this for a bunch of time. Here is my document in the two-dimensional space. This is the same document that we've been grown to love till now. You know, 10 documents. You know, first five were sort of more databasey. Next five were sort of more statistics regression sort of thing. Okay, if I now consider axis 1 and axis 2 to be factor 1 and factor 2, and I know the coordinates of the documents as well as terms in this new space, right? These are the coordinates of the documents. And the terms would be TF times FF, right? Here's one of the very interesting things. First of all, you notice that the documents nicely arrange themselves this way. Okay, all the documents 5 to 10 are here, the documents 1 to 5 are here. I'm sorry, 6 to 10 are there and 1 to 5 are here. So there is like a natural separation of the data, which you did not see previously. Well, of course, you couldn't see it previously because it was six-dimensional data and I didn't have a nice plot for you to show. But now in the two dimensions, you can actually see that here is, you know, even a simple clustering of any kind would have shown you that this is one cluster, that's another cluster. Okay? That's point one. Now point two is, suppose I have two new documents. Okay? D1 is a document only containing database 50 times. D2 is a document only containing Word SQL 50 times. What would your vector space similarity have said as to the similarity between D1 and D2? Zero. Yep, because one has only databases, one has only SQL, and we would like to delude ourselves into thinking that the original keywords are completely uncorrelated, and so this in fact the similarity is zero. But you guys know that database and SQL, hey, it's more or less the same. And it's not just you knowing. The population of the documents is telling you this. Correlation analysis would have told you this, right? In fact, database will be close enough to SQL. Now, in fact, if I look at plotting D1 and D2 in my new two-dimensional space, this is D1 and that is D2. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, you know, you have not understood. I mean, here's the interesting thing. You don't know what SQL is. You don't know what database is. These are just two keywords. But the semantics comes from the corpus. Semantics comes from the corpus of the data, the document space that you have. And that told you that really, you know, database and SQL close enough, and so they are in fact. And in fact, previously you were only using, in the correlation analysis, you would only use the correlation to say, if you are looking for database, shall I also look for SQL? That's the way we were doing it in the idea that we discussed last time. Now we are saying, hey, I won't even ask you. You are looking for database, right? Your query would be here. And your query will be close enough to a document containing only SQL. Okay? That's the nice thing. And this is probably as impressive an example as you'll get of LSI actually working in practice. Okay? And that's the reason why, despite all the other problems regarding some missing rows and columns that you guys found in the homework problem, I stuck with this example because I used the same thing from the beginning to the end. So there is like a punchline at the end that you could actually see what's going on with them. Okay. Now, let me go back a little bit more. So, let me recap the rank discussion in the context of SVD, which I already said it, which is we set ourselves a problem and we were trying to see, given an M, find an M dash of rank K that is closest to M, where distance is defined in this norm. Okay, and it so happens that if you do SVD on the original matrix and you compute the new matrix by keeping only the first k singular values and zeroing out everything else and multiplying the matrix back, then that's the closest you can get. Okay, let me show you one other slide which actually did not, it's only unfortunately available for a different example. I'll do this for this example once I go back. Okay. This is a different data. Okay, for some other data of documents and terms. Okay, to make things interesting, this time documents are like this and terms are like this. I don't want you to get confused. Think in terms of DTs and TDs and you'll never get confused. Think in terms of M, God help you. Okay. Now here's the interesting thing. If I take this matrix, you see this matrix, take a good look at it. If you take K equal to 2 and do dimensional reduction and reconstruct the matrix, it will look like this. If this came and bit you, would you have realized it's kind of close to this? It's not very obvious that it's actually close to it. It turns out that of all the matrices of the same dimensions but rank equal to 2, this winds up being the best. Okay? And so it's a reconstruction with noise thrown out. And this is with K equal to 4. And you'll now notice that, in fact, these are 1s, right? And so there was a 0.5. And that's very far away. But by this time, it actually came to 1.16. It shifted to the other end, a little bit, damping. But K equal to 6, it's much closer. It starts looking close even to you. Okay. But again, the point I want to make to you is you never really want to look at these matrices. You don't have to. All you need is the DF times FF and DF times FF, and those are the document descriptions in the new space. And then if you want to compute the document similarity, you find the similarity between DF times FF vector. So you'll never actually look at the reconstructed matrix. You don't have to. Okay. Which brings us the following issue. What about the query? I know what to do with the documents. Right? I mean, I basically, after doing SVD, after zeroing out the values I don't care about, right, then I can compute the specification of the document in the new dimensional space, okay, which basically was what we did here. So, this is a really bad color. I cannot change it, I think. But this used to be the original document representation in the factor space. Now if I remove these, then I basically remove everything except for the first two columns. Okay, so now the documents really do have only two coordinates. Now what are those coordinates? God knows what they are. They are some linear combination of the keywords. This actually is a problem in people using LSI. Because you say, okay, can you reduce the dimensionality? I'll reduce it. Here, two dimensions. Then you say, what are those dimensions? I have no idea. It's 15 times computer minus 7 times document, 7 times SQL, minus 4 by 3 times linear regression. That's the term. And people say, what? Why should we care about this? So people actually like the less optimal way of reducing dimensionality, which is stick to the original k dimension, original n dimensions, and take a subset of the original n dimensions. That is the usual feature selection idea, where I'll only take, if I give you x, y, z axis, and I only say take two axis, then you will take either x, y, or y, z, or x, z. I argued to you that oftentimes that selection would be inoptimal because the data may be actually equally variant in all the original directions, but has completely differing variance in made-up directions, which are new coordinate axes. Okay, so the dimensions that the LSI invents for you, you have no clue what they mean. In fact, you, as I said, the terms also become vectors in that space. Just as the, your terms, the ones that you like, database becomes a vector in that space. So in fact, this picture tells you, in essence, this picture tells you in essence that, remember, D2 is also just really SQL. It's a keyword. And so it is in the space too. So the keywords are happily sitting along with documents as non-trivial vectors. They have non-zero components in both directions. Okay, so this is a problem with LSI in terms of you telling your boss exactly what dimensions you kept. But if all your boss cares about is whether you got a slightly better similarity assessment, then you can tell them, look, you know, take it. You know, I'm guaranteeing you that this is good. Okay. So I was talking about, so this is the kind of a conclusion of the LSI ranking idea, which is, if you have documents, you know what is the new description of the documents in the reduced space. If you have terms, you know their description in the reduced space. And in fact, that picture that I just showed you shows documents as well as the two terms, database and SQL, in the same space. And so now if you do vector similarity in that space, whatever similarity metric you care about in that space, then hopefully you will wind up taking correlations, synonymy, polysemy into account. Okay. By the way, LSI has nothing to do with vector similarity. You can use any similarity metric that you know and love. If you like bag similarity, like Jaccard coefficient, that's fine. LSI just basically tries to give you a new dimensionality space, new coordinate space. So you still have all your options on similarity metrics. Since we are into vector similarity, we'll stick to it. There was a real chance. That's exactly the point. Okay? So, that's a very good point, which is, what do you do for the query? You know, so as long as you're computing the similarity between the documents, I already told you how to do it. But I give you a new query, and I really want to find out the similarity between the query and the documents. How do you do this? Idea one, which is a foolproof idea, is what is query but a document? So you take the DT matrix, add an extra row corresponding to the query. Now it is a big DT matrix with an extra Q row. Now do the LSI. So everybody gets transformed into the factor space. So query guy got transformed, other document got transformed. Now take the vector space similarity between the last row and every other row. Instead of n square, you only do n minus 1 vector space similarities. Works well, but it's a stupid idea, right? Because you have gazillion billion documents, and every time a query comes, you do SVD. Which brings up the question, how fast is SVD? How fast is SVD? Right? So this is my DT, okay? If I say DF, FF, TF dash, TF equal to SVD of DT, done. Pretty fast. Okay? And let's first of all look that those are exactly the numbers I showed you, right? You know, basically I used MATLAB. I don't know what those numbers, I mean, I did not do it by hand for the SVD. Okay? And this is your DF vectors and your TF vectors. Okay. Now it's fast, looks like, for 10 by 6 matrix, it was pretty fast. Now, when was the last time you did a 10 by 6 information retrieval other than in an exam, which you haven't done yet? But since I'm in the MATLAB, let's do a couple more things. DD is equal to DT times DT dash. That's my DD. Okay, this is my correlation matrix. Okay? Now, I do U V equal to eigenvector decomposition of DD. Okay? And what is interesting, of course, is the eigenvalues, which are these. Which are these? 5.9845 times 10 power 3 is the first eigenvalue. Okay? Now let's look at this. This doesn't look good, right? So this is V. What about square root of V? That's exactly what we had in the SVD. Okay, so I mean this is proof by MATLAB. But more importantly, how long does LSI take? It looks fast enough for small things, but here is the computational complexity of SVD. To do singular value decomposition, you take essentially that much. Okay, it's m cube and m square. That's the best algorithm. And there's like a huge area which tries to improve complexity of the SVD algorithms. In particular, trying to compute SVD approximately, not exactly. Okay, and they are there. It's like a big issue. People are interested in developing it. But still, if you don't know much better, you are doing cubic or square cubic complexity. Okay, which is polynomial. In any other class, you should be happy. It's just polynomial. In AI, we wouldn't even bother about SVD because every reasonable problem is at least NP complete. If not, we have no interest in it. Okay, but N cube is bad if N is gazillion billion. Right? So we do have a problem there. And in fact, this does affect many things about LSI, but in particular, it affects our issue, which is, how do I handle query to document similarity? My first idea was, yeah, throw the query into the document term matrix. That's a dumb idea because I'm going to take extra cubic time, cubic in terms of documents, every time somebody gives me a query. So you say, you know, give me a query, come back after this semester is over, I'll get you the result, which does not keep customers happy. So here is another idea, which is act as if the coordinate axis would not have changed with just one extra query. If you have billion documents and million keywords, right, and one extra query just changes this into billion one by million matrix, and the variance in the data is not significantly different enough, that if you did SVD on this, you would basically have SVD close to the original one. The coordinate axis showing the maximum variation will all be the same. If to that extent, you can act as if the axis have already been determined. DF and TF have been determined. Now if you come as a Q, you just transform yourself into this space. What do I need to do? Given Q, I need to find, basically for the Q that said, it corresponds to, here's the idea. Remember this equation, right? DT, which is term document term matrix, is DF times FF times TF dash. That's your SVD. That's what we've been doing. So if you have query Q, which would be an extra document, that would be, that row would have been DFQ times FF times TF dash. Okay, so what I need really is DFQ times FF, because that would be the representation of the query in the document factor space. And remember, everybody else, one of the advantages is I could have transformed all the documents into the factor space already, and I'm staying now. So the idea is I would have forgotten about the original six-dimensional documents, I only keep my two-dimensional document representation upfront, even before anybody shows up with their query. And when they come with the query, I just convert the query into the same space, do a quick vector similarity. Presumably, you won't be wasting any more time than normal vector similarity does, and presumably, you can get a much better result in terms of similarity. So the only question, of course, is I just need to get this piece, DFQ times FF. Now, if I were to multiply Q by TF on this side, I also get to multiply this whole thing by TF on that side, right? Now, TF dash times TF would be identity matrix. Why? Because those are the orthonormal basis vectors. So with that sleight of hand, I have now seen that what I want, which is DFQ times FF, can be got just by multiplying my query by TF matrix, which I just have already. Now, of course, if the number of documents are of the same order, I mean, if it's less than 10, then doing this versus doing the top one will have very different results. But if the number of documents is close to, you know, much larger, you know, hundreds and thousands, then this is as good as the previous one. So this is what you do. So what you do, you do the LSI, you decide on the number of dimensions that you want to keep, okay, and you basically you transform the documents into the reduced dimensional space and keep that representation with you, and also keep handy the TF matrix. And when a query comes, you multiply it by TF. Okay? Multiply it by TF. And then that's also now in the same vector space as the other documents. It's in the same k-dimensional vector space as the documents now. Now you do your vector similarity. That's all LSI is. Okay? Now, great idea. Nobody uses it on the search engine. Okay, people keep discovering it for various places, but currently at the full corpus, document corpus level, nobody does latent semantic indexing. Why? Because it's too costly. Okay, doing the N-cube analysis is too costly. Now, there are things that once you understand what LSI is doing, it winds up being useful across many other things, including right now and plus later on, like the LDA, which is a classification idea, winds up being very well connected to LSI, which is very useful. And the second point is that you can do LSI either on the entire corpus of documents or on just a small subset of them. One idea that we talked about when we looked at Vivissimo, which is the query engine that clusters the document results, is that, you know, you give a query, you know, when the user gives a query, send the query to the search engine, whichever search engine, you know, farm it out, get the top 100 results, cluster them, and show the clusters to the user. Now, for the clustering to work, ultimately, we'll see, it's not surprising at all, that to figure out clustering, you need to figure out distances. Clustering is based on distances and similarities, just the same way retrieval is based on distances and similarities. If you got your distance metric wrong, your clusters look ugly. I mean, they have no connection to reality. If you get it right, you do well. So anything that improves similarity assessment will improve clustering too. So one great idea is take your 100 documents, top 100 documents, do an LSI, reduce dimensionality, then cluster. What that will do is it will reduce the noise. It will reduce the noise and make things look, make it easier to look for clusters. It's hard for me to show you how these documents would have looked in the six-dimensional space. But believe me, you wouldn't have seen this nice clustering effect. Now, on this data, if you were to do clustering, most reasonable clustering algorithms would have figured out, yeah, this is one cluster, that's another cluster. By removing the noise, even a dumb distance metric can show you the cluster. Okay? So an idea is to use LSI on the top K results and do clustering. And I cannot be sure what Vivisimo actually does, but a search engine very similar to Vivisimo in terms of the idea, which is basically to cluster the search results and show clusters, was Manjara. And this was essentially done by a theoretician, I think Ravi Kannan, and another theoretician, whose only interest was essentially to find better algorithms for approximate computation of SVD. So they found one, and they used it. So even for 100 documents, remember, if you take cubic time, people can still get mad at you. Even for 100 documents, you want to do it faster. Okay, so they did this SVD, approximate SVD computation method, which they applied online. So after you show the query, they get the 100 results. Already they're taking a hit because they don't have an entire corpus in front of them. They have to send this query. They have to outsource it to Google or Baidu or Yahoo or whatever. Okay, and then wait for the results to come. So a couple of seconds have already gone. And then very quickly, before showing it to the user, do the SVD, remove some of the dimensions, and then cluster. Okay. Now, one other thing that I want to mention with respect to this question that was brought up earlier in the class is, I am making it sound as if losing dimensions that actually do have non-zero variance is a virtue rather than a loss. Because if what you are losing is noise, good for you. Okay, so you do that and you get your clustering. So that's a great idea, and in fact, that is one of the things you get to do as a choice in like the third part of the project. People have done it in the past and they were generally happy. Okay, I don't quite know what Vivisimo does. They haven't published it. Okay. That's basically what I wanted to say. I did want to show you one more. Okay. One other interesting thing, since I do have uncharacteristically 5 full minutes left, and I'm all out of things to say, so let me pad some. Actually, an important point, which is, okay, this is a picture. This, you will keep seeing it every time when you look at SVD, you know. I didn't even show you because I felt the other way of describing it is much better. But you know, essentially what you're doing is you're taking DT, you're splitting it into DF times FF times TF dash, okay? And then you're zeroing a piece of it, so you only have a small square, which in essence cuts down this part of DF and this part of TF. But you multiply it, you'll get a matrix which is of the same size as the original matrix. But it is not. It has a lower rank. It has only rank k. Okay, but I hope you actually got why this makes sense. I mean, the only critical part that I haven't done, because it's out of the scope, is showing that, in fact, the calculus of variations will show you that the optimum, if you want to minimize the distance between the two matrices, original matrix and a matrix with k rank, the answer is in your singular decomposition. Okay. The other thing, of course, is I want you to remember that dimensionality reduction in general, I had a slide on that, I will bring it back. Dimensionality reduction in general is a much more, it's not just LSI. Okay. For example, I mentioned that if you want to just pick the subset of the original features, that's just feature selection. And there are ways of doing that. And in fact, there is like a whole area called feature selection, which tries to just, you know, reduce the dimensionality of the data, but in connection to a classification task. Okay, that's point one. Point two is that when you have classification tasks, and this is actually this LDA thing, and I just can't stop myself. I'll show it to you now. you know, we'll get back to this when we actually do classification. But suppose I have some data like this. This is the total amount of data. The black dots and the red dots in the two-dimensional space are the total amount of data. If you do LSI on this entire data, what would you get as the principal axis? Use your intuition. This would be the principal axis, right? And this will be the secondary axis. So if you only have to keep one dimension, you would keep this, not this. Now, I'll tell you the following. What you are really interested in doing, when I told you, when we were doing LSI previously, you had no clue why you are reducing the dimensionality. You just wanted to reduce dimensionality. It could be used for many different things. Now I want to tell you right now that the real reason I want to reduce dimensionality is I want to actually, the only problem I'm trying to solve is, given a new instance, I want to tell whether it is in the green cluster or the black cluster. Do you understand what I'm saying? Green cluster or black cluster? What is the dimension that actually matters in that case? It's this. Not that. You can essentially, so this is called LDA. What I just did is LDA, which is you're reducing dimensions of the data, knowing fully well that you want to classify the data on some particular, given some training data. In that case, the dimensions that you might reduce might be different from the case when you don't know what you're going to do. Because when you don't know what you're going to do, then the majority rules. This is the maximum variation, so you think this is the most important thing. Right? This is basically the point that many people make. I mean, that if an alien were to come to the Earth, all of us look very, 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 very similar to them. Of all the possible designs for intelligent thingies, we are stuck in one small space. Okay, we are all extremely similar. We have two hands and, you know, two legs and all that stuff, and we are so impoverished in terms of imagination that even when we, you know, generate alien human beings, aliens in movies, they too have two eyes. They just come out, that's all. So we are so stuck, right? And yet, when we are looking at each other, we look at all the differentiating aspects. So reducing dimensionality makes a difference, is dependent on what it is that you're trying to differentiate. Okay, so that's dimensionality direction with respect to classification, and feature selection also can be done with respect to classification. And the last point I want to mention is the following thing. This dimensionality reduction at LSI can only work if the dependence between the dimensions is linear. If it's nonlinear, it doesn't work. Okay? So for example, if you have nice circular data, so all your data points are on this. All your data points are on this. Okay? Now clearly, it's really a one-dimensional data, except the dimension is non-linearly defined in terms of these two dimensions. So if you were to plot this in x square plus y square root xy sort of dimensions, you will nicely get this linearly separated. You guys, those of you who took 471 last semester, know, for example, that there are techniques which can deal with linear separation, such as perceptrons. And there is data which cannot be linearly separated in the original space, but everything can be linearly separated if you blow up the dimensions. If you increase the dimensionality, everything can be linearly separated. And that was the kernel trick. Okay? So, even though LSI doesn't work for nonlinear dimensionality reduction, you can play this game wherein you change the, you increase the number of axes. I mean, crazy stuff we are doing. We have 100 dimensions. We want to go to 15. So we first thing we do is go from 100 to 5000. In fact, in theory, when you do kernel trick, you go from 100 to infinite number of dimensions, so that we can come back to 15. Because when you go to this infinite number of dimensions, then the dependencies which are linear here, non-linear here, can be linear in that new dimensional space. And so linear techniques will work. LSI can work there. So whenever you do this, you say kernel X. So kernel SVD, kernel PCI, kernel LSI. Okay. Now, another way of thinking about what we just did is to say that all that a kernel does, I mean, again, this is something that I'll probably have to repeat multiple times later on when we actually talk about kernelization again. In essence, all you need to do is change the way the distance between two points is measured. If you change your similarity metric, if you ever change your similarity metric, you are in effect changing the number of dimensions. You are in effect throwing it into a different space. And that's what kernelization in practice winds up being. If you know the right type of similarity for your data, then you'll be happy. Okay? So this is kind of nice, many connections to LSI. We were originally interested in this as a logical conclusion of handling correlation between keywords and the transitivity of keyword correlation and synonymy and polysyny. But it turns out being related to one of the more fundamental ideas, which is reducing the dimensionality of data. Okay? So we will stop here, and I will send you problems to work on for LSI and correlation analysis. There is one which unfortunately is no longer as interesting as when I set it, where I set this bunch of documents where you will be able to see that Bush and Saddam are closely related, because every one of them is dead, unfortunately, but so it's no longer as much fun. But you know, every document which is saying Bush was talking about Saddam in my corpus, as was the case in New York Times on those days. Okay, and so really, they're really close to each other. So if you ask for Bush, you should throw in a couple of documents of Saddam, which is kind of nice. Okay. Yes.
For that, what kind of non-linear correlation?